Steve McKenna. Welcome.
Thank you, Frank.
Steve, what originally attracted you to jazz?
Ooh, that's a long time ago.
Because you were into rock music as a young fellow, weren't you?
How did you know that? Is that on my website?
Oh, I saw a couple of photos on your website.
Yeah. Glam rock days. I was a boarder at Wesley in Melbourne. My parents were, we lived in Seymour, and they sent me down to Wesley as a boarder, and I got into music down there. They were in the days like 1976, was my last year at school. And if you remember those days, it was all Sherbet and Madeley, Kush, Hush, AC/DC, and I initially got into guitar via that sort of genre, those three things, and or Deep Purple and etc. And it's a kind of bizarre. I got right into it, and I practiced all my arpeggios and all my scales and all my rock stuff, and then that went on for a couple of years. And then my parents took me to hear Joe Pass play with Dizzy Gillespie around 76 or something like that, I think Festival Hall in Melbourne. And I don't know, that didn't do too much for me at the time. I got to play with Joe Pass years later, actually. I would never say, didn't really dig you then, Joe. I don't think he would have appreciated that.
Yeah.
But then they took me to a circus, I don't know, some Moscow circus, and there was a band there, and they were playing all, it's a jazz guitar player, and then they did these little bit things in between whatever, you know. Mm. And the guy's playing all these notes, all that stuff. And I go, geez, I've just been playing the blues scale, playing all this rock stuff, And which was great, of course, but I was very always inquisitive about stuff. Like, where do all those notes come from, you know?
Yeah.
So that got me started in the hearing a different feel, the melodic content coming at me from a different place, you know? And then my parents ended up sending me to a guitar teacher called Bruce Clark, who's a famous guitar player. I mean, he must be 80 now, and I don't even know if he's still playing. Somewhat conservative in his approach, but that was good for me at the time because he got me reading and going through the what's called the Berkeley series, the books, and reading and learning my harmony and theory. And so he started getting me into jazz, and he's a complete jazz nut. He's got, you know, Jimmy Rainey, Jimmy Rainey and Herb Ellis, Barney Kessel, Joe Pass, Philip Catherine, Larry Coryell, John Scofield to a degree. You know, he wasn't too keen on that because that was like...
A bit modern?
Yeah, a bit sort of, you know. He had some funny things to say about some of those guys. But that got me kind of, learning all that serious music, I guess. And then I ended up doing a gig with him when I was 19 or 20 at the Pink Vic, Peter Gordian's Pink Victoria Hotel.
Okay.
Do you know, have you ever heard of that?
No.
Oh, this is a famous hotel on Beaconsfield Parade. And I was playing with Larry Keane Jr. on drums and Ron Terry on bass, and sometimes Charlie Blott. These are names from the 40s and 50s. And there I am, a 20-year-old kid playing with these guys, 50s and 60s and 60 around me, learning all, you know, playing all these standards like Sweet Georgia Brown and Topsy. And so that's how I actually started. I mean, that's a long-winded answer. But
as a jazz guitarist, are you influenced by guitar players only, or do you list other instrumentalists or even vocalists as an influence?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, the cliche answer is, you know, I listen to piano players and trumpet, but I mean, it is true now. I love guitar players, and I certainly hear a lot of young guys coming out all the time and great playing, but I don't sort of tend to get too fussed with it too much. I'm sort of getting into, you know, I've been getting into people like Keith Jarrett, like we talked about a little ago, and, you know, Freddie Hubbard, for instance, or, you know, just any Michael Brecker, anybody that plays the hell out of their instrument and it's got, you know, so I can put it on and there's a great line. What is that? What is that lick or that idea or what scale is that coming from or blah, blah, blah. So it's not about guitar. It's just about the notes coming at me. That's really the way I see it now or have done for quite a while.
Now, your brand new album, what kind of feel were you trying to achieve with New Times, it's called? And does it tie in specifically with the performers you have on there, who's Andrew Gander and Dawn Wayland and Bernie McGinn?
Unfortunately, well, I mean, I'm playing with unbelievable players, but those guys that I'm playing with on Saturday on the album, because Andrew's now living in Melbourne and Sean Whalen's living in New York.
Mm.
And, well, I'm playing with Bernie. He's going to be doing the first set with Brendan Clark on bass and David Goodman on the drums. So we're going to be playing kind of straight ahead stuff with Bernie. I'm trying to just, like, I mean, he's really, you know, he plays so great in a certain sort of way, you know, and I'm just going to set in that style because I want to. And there's a couple of bebop heads there. And,
yep.
And then I'm doing a second set with Dale Barlow. Yep. So we're going to stretch out and do some of the other things that I like to play, like, too. Maybe some, not fusion, but stuff getting into different areas, different colours and stuff, you know.
Okay.
So it's going to be a wide gamut of music on the night. But what was the question? Yeah, no, well, the players on the CD aren't all going to be there, unfortunately, but it'll be great.
The Hank Mobley piece, Breakthrough.
Right.
What's the, can you tell us a little bit about this particular tune?
Well, basically, it's just a blues, but I started playing this with Bernie because I was in Bernie McGann's quartet for quite a while, and we did a whole lot of touring, and that was part of his repertoire, and I like the tune. It's kind of got a modern vibe to it, a challenging melody in fourths and stuff like, fourths, I think, yep. And I play pretty fast, and it's very challenging. The synth, the piano gets into some pretty crazy things, and we do some fours and kick it around. It's probably the most full-on track of the album, and I use some weird effects on it too. Not weird, it's not weird to me, but it's like a kind of a, I don't know, there's a distortion thing going on, stereo chorus and bits and pieces, yeah.
What was your main motivation to move to Germany?
Well, I'd been in Sydney for I studied in the States for till about 83. There I was at the Guitar Institute of Technology, and I was looking for Pat Martino and Joe Pass and wonderful musicians. And I came back to Melbourne, well, Victoria, and I worked for my father and his news agency for a while to save up enough money. I was 22, 23, to either move to Melbourne or Sydney, you know, to make the big move. And in the meantime, I was commuting from Seymour to Melbourne. I was playing with Paul Grabowski sometimes, and Mike Grabowski, David Jones on drums. We were all young guys just playing and having, yeah, a ball, you know, playing in various venues. And Joe Kindamo, I did a lot of gigs with him.
Okay.
But they were certainly low profile kind of, you know, wedding gigs and all that stuff. But he was playing amazingly back then, either 22 and 3. And then I eventually moved to Sydney, and I worked with everybody over a 10-year period, and just sort of just felt like I needed a change, you know, to get out there and see what was going on in the world. My wife got a job teaching at an international school in Munich. So, you know, obviously I didn't go over there just with nothing. So we had a job for her to go to, which gave us our correct papers and legal stuff. We had our children over there, so
yeah,
we were in the medical system and the whole bit, you know, it was terrific. And Peter O'Mara is a guitar player who's been living in Germany for the last 30 years or something, and he hooked me up with the players. And we're talking about this jazz club called the Unterfahrt before, which means under travel. Don't know what's that. That's got to do with a jazz club name, but that's what it was called. And there was a jam session there every Sunday, and I played there a couple of times. And not the bad Steve, wunderbar, and all that sort of stuff. You know, handing my card out, and all of a sudden I was working all the time and doing lots of interesting travel, and I played with Barbara Dennerline, organ player,
yeah,
and did, yep, lots of touring with her all over Europe.
Do you recall an American drummer by the name of John Betch?
I saw John lots of times. Yeah, he was great, wonderful player. I didn't get to play with him, I don't think, but he wasn't living in Munich. He's living somewhere else, but he came through. Big black guy, bald guy, terrific. I played with a guy called Rick Hollander a fair bit, who with Dale Barlow in New York quite a bit, and I'm actually going back to Germany for a tour next year with him and a guy called Tim Armacost and Martin Zenker and Rick Hollander. So we've got a little few-month tour all around Germany and all over the place.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a wonderful experience, and a lot of travel, lots of different experience, lots of different music. I played with Carl Davis, big band, he's a conductor. And I had to play banjo and acoustic guitar and rock guitar, doing Mancini tunes in a huge orchestra. And so I had lots of different experiences. And I got to play with Bob Berg, which was amazing. So I did lots of things. It was great.
How would you compare the depth of jazz talent in Australia, say, to Germany or Europe in general?
There's great players everywhere. There really is. There's some wonderful players here. Thing is, in Australia, we don't get to play as much as we we would like to, because of there's not a lot of live venues. And the problem is also with the venues, a lot of them are Dixieland and straight ahead, and that's fine too, it's whatever. But there's not enough balance, wide enough balance. When I was in the 80s, I used to play a lot more than I do now, because it was like the basement. It's still around, but it was more of a jazz club back then.
Why do you think that Melbourne can operate a seven-night-per-week jazz club and Sydney can't seem to do that?
Look, I really don't know. I mean, in Melbourne, I know that Melbourne's supposedly a lot more arts-orientated, and there are some clubs down there. A lot of door gigs, I think. Their overheads are probably a little lower. Maybe it's because it's colder down there. People tend to go inside. That's always something that people talk about. I don't really know, to tell you the truth, but Sydney's a real glitzy money town, isn't it? Forge ahead, money. Yeah. All you talk about, people, you know what it's like to go to a dinner party. We all talk about our interest rates and stuff. First subject, bang. It's not like, oh, did you hear the latest jazz guy down the jazz club or whatever? Mm. So it's just the way we are here. I'm not going to change it.
What about European audiences or in fact, German audiences, where your expertise would be mostly? How do you find them more discerning than Australian audiences? Would you say that?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really... Yeah, I don't want to really put Australian audiences down, but, I mean, the reality is when you're playing for a German audience, you could hear a pin drop most of the time. You know what it's like. And, yeah, I mean, I certainly noticed that when you're playing over there, when you're in the audience and if you start a conversation up or someone's talking, you hear shh, shh, or the waitress will come over, can you be quiet while the band's playing? It's just that's the way it is. There are people up there, they're artists, they're doing the thing. People have paid money to come and hear it. That's what they want to do. A lot of the time here you find that too, but as a general thing, it's not the case, people yelling out, can you sing happy birthday, mate? play Summertime like George Benson. It's like, okay. You know what I mean? It's just, I mean, you have your great gigs and you have some bad gigs. The way it is.
How do you pick up on the vibe of an audience?
Sometimes if the music's not happening, I'm not feeling great in my playing, I tend to sort of go into myself and kind of ignore the audience to a degree. And that it sort of can make it worse. If the band's happening and I'm feeling good, I might start talking to them. There's a bit of a banter and it's a loose feel and, communication with the other musicians. You smile and talk. If people can see that you're sort of having a good time and the music's happening, it sort of all flows. But if you're not having a good day or night, it sort of implodes on itself, for me anyway.
What do you prefer, what situation do you prefer working in, the small intimate jazz club or a larger venue, a larger concert venue?
I like it both. If the music's happening in, I've played in some huge festivals in Germany and they were great, I like the idea of, you go there and all the amps are set up, you get a great monitor system and people, is everything okay and blah, 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 and then you play with some great players and it's happening. And then all you do, it's the same for me, really, to tell you the truth. It's just about the music, and if I'm into it and there's people there to get you feel like you're communicating and there's us and them out there, it works. If it works, it's the same,
New Times. This is from your own pen. What did you set out to do with this piece?
Oh, this is a tune written ages ago. I first moved to Germany, actually. It's simply that, New Times. It's a kind of gospel-y, bluesy vibe, sort of distorted guitar thing, just trying to create that feeling,
It's a long time between drinks, actually, Steve, as far as your recordings are concerned. My question for you, have you been recording much as a sideman, and if so, what other releases should people be seeking out?
I did a bunch of stuff in Germany and they're not released here. So, yeah, I did about four or five, six CDs with people in Germany as a sideman in there. I've got no idea where they are. I mean, I have them at home, of course.
Yeah, of course.
But they're mine.
Yeah. You're about to team with Dale Barlow
for
a special duo project, and I think, if I have the information correct, you've already done one gig for the Jazz Groove, is that correct?
Yeah, we did one. We've done about three or four jazz gigs together just in the last month or 2 months. So I've known Dale for 25 years or something, but we've never really played together. We've sort of hooked up overseas, and I've seen him hi at the jazz clubs that we've, you know, he's been passing through and I've been passing through, because he's done a lot of travelling and lived in New York and Europe, all over the place. And I've always been blown away by his playing. He's like amazing. So we finally hooked up, you know, because he just lives around the street, and he said, "Hey man, why don't we get together one day and have a plow?" You know, so we didn't. And then he called me up for a gig, and then I called him up for a gig. So we had the same band, but one, two SEMA gigs. And we did one night of all my original tunes and one night of his stuff. And we taped them all, recorded them all. It was great. The vibe was really, really good. And then we ended up doing these duo gigs. We did one at the Excelsior, and that was great. We just sort of, what do you want to play? Started playing, and an hour and 10 minutes by, that was it. It's great.
Now, when I saw that happening, the reason being, I first saw it advertised as part of this year's Jazz Now Festival, which you're performing on Thursday, the 21st of this month, at the Sydney Opera House.
That's right.
But, it's a quite an interesting pairing, the saxophone and the guitar. Do you know whether it's been done before in a duo sort of way?
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, Burroughs and George Goller had a whole thing going on here for ages. Oh, although I think he played clarinet, didn't he?
A lot of the time, and flute.
Flute. Dale plays flute a bit as well. Wow.
I just can't recall when I saw the duo. I thought, yeah, that's.
I'll interesting. Have to think about that. Yeah. Go through my record collection. You know,
yeah. No, it's great. Now
it's
that's
challenging. I tell you, as a guitar player, it's really challenging, because it's one thing to sort of play behind the horn player, and then he stops, and it's just, okay.
Yeah,
so you've got to really cover a lot of territory if you want to keep the flow going, because you don't have left hand like a piano player to keep the bass line going. So you've got to make it work some way. Yeah, I've been doing that over the years, but now it's coming up as a new challenge, a fresh sort of thing. I've got a thing called a loop station, which is a little delay pedal that you can, say you do a chorus of a tune, Stellar or something, and you're into it and you're playing. You play a sort of chorus and you press the button that records a chorus of your background. Oh. Then you press it and it turns off, and you just keep continuing doing whatever you're doing with the sax player or whoever. He stops, your turn, you just, and then you go bang, and then you've got a backing for yourself when you play.
I see.
It's kind of interesting, but if you goof on it, you're in trouble. It's sort of, I'm in the wrong place. Well, he's in the wrong place. And it's like, it can be a mess. So you've got to be careful.
No quick edit or delete button.
No. Well, there's a button you can press to can.
Yeah.
If you find being a mess or... And there's a drum thing that comes on, and if you don't turn the drum volume down, it goes boom, 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 at any tempo it wants to. So it can be a nightmare.
Yeah.
But I did that for a couple of tracks, and it worked out okay, you know. Because I was living in London for a little while, doing some of these gigs, and I was depping for Carl Orr and Dave Colton, a couple of guys from here, mm-hmm. who've been living in London for a while, and there's a lot of back playing behind female singers. And these guys have been doing these gigs for so long, they got bored, just by themselves playing the guitar. So everybody runs around with these things called a loop station, which is this delay thing that I'm talking about. So yeah, anyway, I'm turning all my students onto it, and they're all going, "Oh man, great thing! I'm practicing with it and all that sort of stuff."
There you go, the loop station.
The loop station.
And this is the Lennon McCartney piece with a little help. Steve, you were going to mention something about this.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I would probably not have thought about putting on a CD of mine, you know, like a jazz CD or whatever, because you don't do them that often. You sort of indulge in exactly what you want to play. So a Beatles tune wouldn't have come to mind, but when I was living in Germany, I was playing with, I might have mentioned before, Rick Hollander,
mm-hmm.
Great drummer, not such a great singer, but he wanted to sing on some gigs, and he wanted to do a Beatles night, and everybody in the band was assigned a tune for the Beatles, from the Beatles, so I was assigned that, and I reharmonized it and put it into 3/4 and messed around with the form of it and just changed it completely. And it worked out really well, so I've been playing it on gigs ever since, and decided to put it down on a CD. There's a drum solo on that. A little halfway through, Andrew Gando gets to sort of play over a phrase that you'll hear. And there's a really nice synthesizer solo that Sean Whalen plays on it. So it works out pretty well, I think.
The Little Help. Steve McKenna, thanks for joining me in the studio tonight.
My pleasure, Frank. Thanks for having me in here. Thank you.